And you all know the story well. We're not reading it in detail. Verse number 1 says, "Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master, and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper." Then you all know about the wonderful way that he acted in the different matters. Now we want to look particularly at verse number 9. "So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot, and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, Go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. But Naaman was wroth and went away in a rage." And then you know how in verse 14, "Then went he down and dipped himself 7 times in Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh came again unto him, like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean." Now look further down, please, at verse 20. "But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, Behold, my master hath spared Naaman the Syrian, in not receiving at his hand that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him, and take somewhat of him. So Gehazi followed after Naaman, and when Naaman saw him running after him, he lighted down from the chariot to meet him, and said, Is all well? And he said, All is well. My master has sent me, saying, Behold, even now there be come to me from Mount Ephraim 2 young men of the sons of the prophets, and give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and 2 changes of garments. And Naaman said, Be content, take 2 talents. And he urged him, and bound the 2 talents of silver in 2 bags with 2 changes of garments, and led them upon 2 of his servants, and they bare them before him. And then you have the interview, verse 26, with his master, and verse 26, "And he said unto him, Went not mine heart with thee when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? Is it a time to receive money, and to receive garments, and olive yards, and vineyards, and sheep, and oxen, and men servants, and maid servants? The leprosy therefore of Naaman shall cleave unto thee, and unto thy seed forever. And he went out from the presence, from his presence, a leper as white as snow." Now most, indeed all of you, have heard this passage preached so often in the gospel, and wisely too, that possibly you'd think there's not too much in it for a ministry meeting. But I hope before we're closed that we will see it has some very precious lessons to teach us. Now just even anyone reading it for the first time will notice that it begins with a leper and it ends with a leper, so that you'll have no difficulty seeing that we nearly get back to where we started as far as that chapter is concerned. And then, of course, in between, we have this man of whom we've been speaking these nights, this man Elisha, and the part that he played in it. And you say, now, why is such an extensive story? Because it does occupy a whole chapter, you must say. Why is it gone into in such detail? And what's the great point? And why is it so? Well, it has a number of lessons to teach us, and I want us to try and notice some of them. I'm not yet at them all, but there is something being done in this chapter that is vital and important. The first thing that you have to realize, that now, for the first time, as far as I know, in Elisha's experience, his power, which is divine power, is going to go out to the Gentiles. Now, in that respect, it's one of the great chapters of the Old Testament, showing us that God's blessing and God's help is not limited to his earthly people. Just as Rahab, as you know, was rescued in the book of Joshua, and you could go right through your Bible and see Ruth the Moabitess and so on, you can look in this passage and you can see that it's demonstrating, illustrating the going forth of the mighty power of God to the Gentiles. Now that, of course, is prophetic as well. Because you see, it is God's purpose, now whether we like it or not, that the nation of Israel, his people, in the power of his Spirit, will be the instrument even in a future day of making known the gospel to sinners or to the Gentiles. And after the Lord's people have been called home, again the testimony will be mainly, as you know from the early chapters of Revelation, it will be definitely centered in the 144,000 and so on of Israel that will be numbered in that coming day. So there's a prophetic side that you mustn't miss. And again, as you look back at it, you can easily see that just as we were pointing out, that the man Elijah, the master of the man we're speaking about here, that man, the master went up to heaven. And it must have been strange to those disciples to hear what he said. He said, go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. That was something that they likely never had dreamt of before. They could scarcely take it in that the Lord would want them to go far beyond what he himself had done. Now, as far as we know, Elijah kept inside the bounds of Israel, mainly in his operations. But here, you see, is God letting us learn from the passage that his purposes are wider, that he's allowing grace to abound toward a Gentile man called Naaman the Syrian. And a man who was, before this, absolutely opposed, really opposed to the nation of Israel. Because it just in the very opening passage goes to show that he had been an instrument in bringing about their destruction and taking captives, one of which was a little maid of whom we'll speak in a moment. Now we need to see that. In the second lesson we want to learn from the passage is this, and it's a very difficult one sometimes for us to take in, that right throughout the Old Testament God used certain instruments to chastise his people. Quite often some of those instruments went beyond what God intended. And as the result of that, those very people, they themselves were punished. Now here's a man called Naaman the Syrian. He has been a mighty man of valor. And he has won a great victory for his own boss or master or king or whatever you call him. And he has taken away captives and he has been successful. And remember, it's the Lord has allowed him to do that. And yet at the same time, the Lord will definitely judge him for quite a few of those heathen nations that were permitted to deal with Israel in their departure from God, went beyond the bounds that God intended and suffered severely for what they had done. They reaped it very sore indeed. Then again, you will see that just at this man's time, and this is a lesson we're all maybe not too quick at learning, that just when his victory was at its best, and when everything had risen to the highest heights of his expectation, that is, he has won the great battle, and he has taken the captives, and he has gained the spoil, he was likely feeling he never was as big or important in all his life. And just then, the leprosy struck. Now can we take that in as a simple lesson? For quite often, in even our experiences, days of encouragement are followed by days of discouragement. Sometimes our bitterest experiences can turn round and be the sweetest experiences in life. And then other times we find that when successes come our way, quite often reverses come at the same time. I could hardly take time to tell you. We could all nearly tell a little story about that. That some of our darkest days were before the brightest. And some of our trying experiences led us into blessings that we never expected. And then other times encouragements were followed by heavy trials. I think it was the late Mr. Gould used to say, you know, not too many of you men remember him somewhere, dear brethren do, but he used to say that if you had one good meeting, you're nearly sure to get a stiff enough in the next. I think this is a very strange thing. I'm just going off my subject now for a minute. You know, the older preachers used to talk about having a stiff meeting and a difficult meeting. I think the young generation hardly know that, but they have such ability now they can just roll on whether it's good or not. They don't seem to miss it. But those old men, you know, they were so dependent on the Lord. that if it didn't go well, they were simply saying, well, oh dear, that was tough tonight. I remember the late Mr. Robert Hawthorne, who preached here in this very hall and had very fruitful times in my early day. I remember him telling us about one of the poorest meetings he said he ever had was down about Lisburn. And he says, you see, I went home in the train and I was miserable. I said to the wife when I went home, I said, that was the poorest gospel meeting I've had for a long time. It was real difficult. And then he went the next night. And when he was coming out of the meeting, a woman says, I got saved last night. She got saved at the meeting what he thought was the poorest. Brother, get a hold of that. Now, that may sound childish to some of you, but there's more to that than you think. Quite often, if meetings are easy and free to preach, the devil's not given too much bother. And if the Lord's beginning to work, sometimes the devil will put up the opposition and difficulties will ensue. Now, you learn that as best you can, because these are weighty things that you're not told by everybody, and you need to ponder them. Anyhow, here's a man and he has had great success, but you know, it's all spoiled. Aye, that but, you know, I know it's in the italics in your Bible, I'm not going to push it, it's not in the original likely, but it does give us the idea fairly clearly, I but. Now I know when you're preaching the gospel, you always say that sinners need it, aye, but there's something wrong, they're sinners and so on, you drive it home that way, but take a look at it wisely and just as it actually is. Here's what spoiled the whole thing. You'd say to an animal, man, you'd get times when you're over in Canaan there. You try to give them boys the works. And you gain great victories. I did indeed. But it doesn't mean much to me now, you know. I have the stamp of death on me. And I have the smell of that old disease about me. And I'm unclean. And I'm in distress. And that that makes life difficult. Now, will you please remember this as best we can now as the Lord's people? These are simple lessons, but they're vital lessons. That it's just God at work. For the same God who gave him victory over the Syrians, over the Israelites, is the same God who gave him the leprosy. Now, don't let us forget that. And that God was working through that leprosy to bring him to a point in his heart where he would need the God of Israel. And where he would need the prophet that is in Samaria. And that's what he would need. I've been trying every night nearly. I suppose you're nearly getting tired of it, but you'll soon get over it. If another night in, we'll not give you any more difficulty. But I've been trying every night to try and get into our minds if I can. And into my own as well. That God's way of working is to make a man conscious of his need and then to supply that need through the gospel. And that's the ear, that's the way you work. God bringing people into need. You being able to see their need and able to meet the need. And that is the answer to the problems that that confront us at the present time. Now then, you can easily see that that spoiled things, and that was serious. Now we want to think of how God would get the news to him of deliverance and of his power and of his servant, Elisha. You see, getting news to people is a big thing. And it's amazing how God can get news to people. Now the instrument he used, as you know on this occasion, was anything but what we would call an important instrument. Just a little gear, a maid. Just one of the captives. Possibly not even able to speak the Syrian language for a while. Trying to lisp over likely as best you could the language of our captors. Now think that over. She's a little lonely girl there. She's been gripped by the cruel hand of war. She has known isolation from all, now don't let us forget it, all that was of God. She's now in a land where God's name's not known. And she's amongst strangers. And yet she's going to be the instrument to bring the news to that great army general. Now I think that if anything in the Bible should encourage us, it's that. That is, now will we get a hold of it as we can, and also a wee bit strange to some of you likely, but it shouldn't be. God has us where he wants us. He brings us just there where he, in his sovereignty, mind you, has decided that we should be. And he has a purpose in where we are, as well as to how we are. And that purpose is that we represent him exactly where he has placed us. Can we keep that in mind? That is, that we be his ambassador in the very corner and spot where he expects us to be. Now, that little maid had, she wouldn't have said she was a preacher. Didn't need to be. She didn't know perhaps a lot. But with, in all humility, and in her own indirect way, for she likely couldn't have spoken possibly to the captain himself, she told his wife, and she got it to him. They got the message to him. Would God, my master, were with the prophet that is in Samaria, and he would cure him of his leprosy. Dear soul, it's wonderful. Maybe you haven't pondered too often those words in Corinthians. God has chosen the weak things, and the things that are not, to bring to naught the things that are, that no flesh might glory in his presence. Now, these are serious matters. Sometimes we would think, in our simplicity, that we are of no use or of no importance, and that we are not likely to be ever used of God for any purpose. The very thought would have been in the little maid's mind, possibly. She never could have explained to her own mind. Now, don't forget this. Why God allowed her to go away to Syria and to be a slave maid in an army captain's house. She couldn't have explained that to anybody under the sun, for she had no way of apprehending it or realizing it. But you see, God was working. We're singing about it. He moves in a mysterious way. His wonders to perform. And he's going to perform a wonder, but he's going to do it through a very unimportant and insignificant little girl. That gives us great encouragement, doesn't it? Do you ever think of it, dear soul? Did you ever think of it? What God could do through you? Why through you? Without having any big excitement about it. No headlines in the paper about it. This, if there had been newspapers those days, there'd have been nothing said about this little girl or anything like that. She put into his mind. Oh, will you listen to it? She put into his mind a spark of hope that there was a remedy if I could get to the man who can give it to me. Now, dear soul, if you could get that introduced to the mind of the dear unsaved with whom you come in contact, they're just like this leprous man. They're just in deep need. They may not feel it. They may not even think about it. But do your best to instill into their minds even the first germ of gospel truth. Even a remark enough to let them know, now there's something to be had. And that something to be had is what you need. And that something to be had is what we already know. Now get to know it, dear friend. Just you think of it. But here we are, just a handful tonight. I suppose one of the smallest meetings that I've spoken to for quite a while. A small meeting. We're not worrying about it. Don't you think it hasn't knocked the heart out of me? You can see that. But what we do want us to get a hold of is this. Isn't it great to know that we have news. True news that we can tell to a needy sinner who may never have heard it before. And tell them news that could be for their eternal well-being. I think that would encourage any of us. Just a little maid. Dropping a remark. Dropping in a seed. That penetrated into the mind. And developing what? And accomplished God's purpose in what she said. Then again, we can learn more of that, and that is that here is this man, And we have often heard it preached in the gospel. We're not going to go into it in detail. But he gathers up a bit of money. Now, don't you be making little of it, what he brought. I'm not a good at calculating, because one of the difficulties you have, you dear Brandon, see this, some of you, when you'll be reading in years to come, you're reading men maybe that wrote their notes on this maybe 70, 80 years ago. And you know, money's changed its value a queer bit since then. And if you know that, because, I don't talk about it from my time, even I've known some of these older ones. But I would judge that in modern money now, without going any further, he brought about half a million with him. Talk about winning the lottery, you know, it was the next thing to it, wasn't it? But mind you, it was some money. You just think of it. These talents that he had with him, and the changes of garments and so on. I tell you, he was laden with wealth. You see, little did he know that the God that he was going to get introduced to is not a God who does things because he's paid for doing it. You see, the world has a wrong idea about God, you see. They always think that he does things for you because he's wanting something back. He wants well paid for it. That's their own theory, you see, because that's the way they are. They do something, but I want them to help me. I want them to pay for it. And I see to it that I'll pay for them. I'll make them pay for it. And you see, it's just the world's idea. Now, it's coming out here in all its colors. He thinks, sure, if I'm going to get this fencing, I'm going to get it on my own terms, for I'll pay my way. I'll not ask it for nothing, for I value it so much. And that's well worth thinking about. Because you see, we all hear this preached in the gospel so often that it's without money and without price, and that it's absolutely free. Then again, I think you will equally say that it's common to all mankind, nearly to the Lord's people as well. He was a bad listener. You'd hardly think that. Maybe you don't know it, but a good many people who sit in gospel meetings, they don't listen right. They don't take any heed of what they're told. And maybe if you were talking to them after a meeting, they'd say, well, do you know, I'm going to do the best I can to get saved. The very thing the preacher said, the opposite. The very opposite. They'll not listen right. And this man didn't listen right. Boy, the maid never said, go to the king of Israel. You all hear this preached in the gospel, but it's a principle that's true in many ways. And quite a few Christians even sit in meetings and they don't listen right. Don't just take the word of God in its nakedness and its bareness and its clarity. They just get all confused and they have their own ideas. And in his mind, he couldn't help but think, well, if I'm the captain of the king of, I'm the captain of the Assyrian army, I needn't go to the, I'm not going to go and talk to Trumps, I'll go and talk to the best in the land, I'll go to the king. And of course, the poor king, he's that excited and annoyed, he thinks this is some kind of a trick that he's going to play on him, and that he's looking a claim upon him, and that he's going to do something on him. He doesn't want to see him at all because he's hurt afraid. And he rends his garments and gets all excited. Because he knows, he says, am I a God that can make a lie? You see, he was making it known to Naaman. No, he didn't think it. He was making it known to Naaman that this thing that's going to happen to you will have to be done by a God. And that God must be the God of Israel. That's the big part of the story, you see. We mustn't miss that. That is, there's another little bit. You see, he was to be with the prophet. That's in Samaria. That's the first wee bit. Now he's getting further, like even from the king. No, the king doesn't know that he's preaching, but he's letting him know indirectly that this cure that he's seeking is going to be a divine operation and not the doings of the mightiest on earth. And that was a big lesson for him to learn. He hasn't learned everything yet. And that is, he's going to have to learn, as we hear preached so often in the gospel, of his... He's going to have to learn his nothingness. You know, when you arrive with all these chariots and all this stuff with you, and all this sort of stuff, you'd think that he's somebody important. And when he arrived, he eventually goes to the prophet, which he should have done at the first, you see. If he listened right, that's where he would have gone. And of course you'd expect the prophet to come out, wouldn't you, and get down on his knees to him and say, isn't it lovely to see you? It's great to see you coming to look for help, and I'm only too pleased to give it to you. Now the prophet doesn't get excited about it. He's just an ordinary creature, just with a leprosy. Who wants to think well of a leper? He's just a leper. And he's a stranger and a foreigner, and he doesn't get excited about him, but he just sends him out a message. And he says, you go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and you'll be cleansed. Now, I don't need to preach that in detail, for you've all heard that too often gone over in the gospel. But we do want us to see the principle that's been made out here. That is, God, through his servant, is bringing a man down to the lowest depths of humility. There, you must admit, if there's one man that would have been proud on earth, it's a man that who's a general and who has won his battles. You could be a general with all the braid in your hat and your medals on your breast, but if you've never won a battle and you've never been successful, it's very humiliating. So now he is one of the proudest men on earth. The leprosy was the first big blow that took him down. But now he's not down low enough yet. He has to go right to the very lowest depths of Jordan. And he has to go down there. And as you know, it's the Old Testament illustration of the new birth. For when he went down, he came up like a little child. So that his flesh was as a little child. You know, you talk about a beauty parlor. I tell you, he went home. I don't know if the wife knew him or not. I think she'd say, well, you know, the wrinkles are gone. And all that old brownness that has been on him with the sunburn and of the battlefield and so on, that's all gone. Now he's got his nice baby-looking skin and his nice cheeks. I'm sure she thought she'd got a new man. And so she had, because he had come through an experience that was wonderful, wonderful. And there's no doubt the lesson that was being taught him is that he went down under death and judgment. Just the same as we do in believers' baptism, and then Jordan. Then, of course, as you know, he was even thinking of Jordan, not a great river, you know. It was a rather strange river, for when you didn't need water, it was overflowing, for it overflowed at the time of harvest. And that's the one time that you wouldn't want too much water about. And it was a strange river. It went down to a very low level in the warmer period, because evidently there were fords through it that you could walk through the bed of it at times, and then other times it had been flooded and you could have needed some miraculous way of getting through. Now that's where he goes to. He goes down into Jordan. Now maybe stop a minute. Didn't you notice that we said one night that nearly all Elisha's operations were connected with water? Hear it again. It's coming in. And his miracles are connected with Jordan. As you know, he went through the river and was opened up. And then we'll see later on he met the iron swim and so on. And it's all nearly connected with water. So that he's directed to the lowest level. The lowest level. And he has learned the solemn lesson. And all of us have to learn that if you're going to get God's blessing, you do what God says. That's a simple principle for sinners. It's a simple principle for Christians. It's as clear to one as the other. And so he came up out of it. Cleansed. He was amazed that the prophet didn't come out and do something. He was amazed that the prophet didn't actually speak a word of healing to him. He was amazed in many ways. Now, I think we've tried again. I hope you're not getting weary of this point, but that Elisha always brings in some roundabout way of doing the miracles. That is, he didn't make the iron float, as we'll see maybe tomorrow night. He dropped a branch in. Do you understand now? And he didn't even heal the waters. He got a cruise in salt. He always uses something. And you see, he didn't come out and put his hand over the place or perform any of those wonders. He had to learn that he was getting the benefits of Elisha's power in the absence of Elisha. Now, can you remember this? Because that's illustrating the blessing that has come to us in the absence of our blessed Lord. You know, when I was a little boy and wasn't saved, I used to think it would be great for to be on earth when the Lord was here and just get salvation direct from himself and just let him say to me, you're saved now, son, and you can go ahead. Everything's well now. But you see, we had to get saved and he wasn't here.
and he was absent. But his power was nonetheless effective. And so Elisha is absent when Naaman is healed. And he's getting to know the power of Israel's God in his own body and in his own deliverance. Now, of course, like every other person who's blessed, he went back to the prophet. And he wanted to compensate him for the benefit he had received. Now, he had no doubts about his... You hear preachers talking about doubts. Well, he had no doubts about his healing. He'd only need to look at himself. I don't suppose he had a mirror in that time, but if he had a bit of polished brass around, he could see he was looking fairly good. And he had no need to be in any doubt about it. It was a mighty work done well and done to God's eternal glory. But now he thinks, I should pay for this. And he goes to the prophet. He says, now I'd like to pay for this. Prophet, he didn't come out to heal him, and he wasn't going to take payment from him for that. Now, he has taught a big lesson. I hope we're learning it. That the time, he says, now for such a time as this is not the time for a Jew to derive benefits from a Gentile that has been healed. He's going to make him feel that he's getting the blessing on the principle of grace, and that he's not paying for it, and he's not meriting it, and there's nothing that of himself about it. And that's very difficult for us to learn at times, because, you know, there are people, and they think, well, you know, I got saved because, you know, I was very anxious. Now, you watch yourself, you men, you were preaching when I'm not here, and I'll be in heaven. Don't be overstressing anxiety. Anxiety is not a savior. Many of our dear sinners, they've listened to stories of conversion and they have got themselves all wrought up and they said, you know, if I could get anxious enough, I would get saved. Now, please keep in mind that when you're preaching the gospel that you're not going to save people by anxiety. Now, we want to see them awakened. They don't misunderstand me. And we want to see them alarmed. But they don't get saved by being alarmed. And they don't get saved by being anxious. There's more to it than that. It's faith in Christ that saves. And no man can earn it. And when you're telling your conversion, don't be telling the people how much you did to get saved and how much you gave up to get saved. For all you got rid of was your sins and you had nothing else to give, so you needn't be blowing about it. Nothing to talk about. Nothing to show off about. It's just God's mercy that pitied us and God's grace that saved us. Now, so much for that. The next thing that we want to see is this, that Elisha is getting into this man's mind, his mind. Thoughts about the God of Israel, for that's the main thing. And the man, he feels now, I could never again, I could never again have any confidence in the God, Rimmon, or whatever you call the God of Syria. I couldn't have any confidence in him. I can only have confidence in the God of Israel. And that's what we really believe the whole point of the passage is. It's to let us see how a heathen man could be converted from his own idolatry and brought to worship the God of Israel. Now, isn't it very humiliating to think that many in Israel had turned from the God of Israel and turned to idolatry? And for that very reason, the nation suffered and was brought into captivity. Now, will you please remember that? For when they made the calves, one at Bethel and the other at Dan, they gave the honour to the calves and they worshipped these objects that they had made, so that they turned to idolatry and they were making little of the God of Israel. Whereas here's a man, a heathen man, and he says, look, there's no other God now, there's no other. He says, you know what I'd like? I'd ask you to give me something. And I want you to give me two bundles, or whatever you call it, of the soil of this land. And I'm going to carry it down to Syria, and I'm going to erect an altar there. Now, I don't know who taught him not to be using cut stones, or not to be having a ladder up to it, but he just wanted something to make a heap. Now, try and get this into your mind. That means to say that God has not only reached his heart, but he's going to establish a testimony for God in a heathen land. It's a very humble thing. But he's going to do that, and he's going to offer sacrifices to the God of Israel. I was going to say, now you listen to it, maybe you never thought of it. Wouldn't it have been wonderful just to hear him and the little maid talking over together relative to the God of Israel? You see, when she went down to be a prisoner in his house, she was there alone. But now that he's back and healed, she has fellowship. She has another one who believes in the same God. You know, dear soul, it's great. Maybe you don't know anything about it, but it's, I don't know whether, and I don't think any of you know about it, but it's a terrible thing to be a lonely Christian. I mean, lonely in this world. When I was a boy, I suppose you all know that well, I was brought up in the country, and I remember at times, I used to walk at night along the roads, and sometimes the tears would have been in my eyes. You say, what was wrong with you? I hadn't a friend on earth that I could go to speak to, and no one to talk to. It was very lonely. Very lonely. That little maiden, landing in a house where idols were everywhere lately, where all the talk was about this God Rimmon, or whatever you'd call him, and where the whole idea was heathendom from start to finish, mustn't it have been a pleasure to her heart when the boss came home? And that he's not only healed of his leprosy, but he's a converted Gentile to the God of Israel. And then for the first time, like from she was taken captive, there are at least two in the land of Syria that believes in God. That is encouraging, isn't it? That's where God is brought. That is, God has brought her into a line of fellowship and into a line of things that she never expected. Now, you would know very well, without me telling you, that in all probability this huge wealth that he was carrying back to Israel was maybe likely booty that he had stolen during his invasion as a warrior. Did ever you think that the greatest treasure he ever brought with him to Syria, or that the army brought with him, was just that little maid? Just that little prisoner. That was the best, I was going to say booty or whatever word you like to use, the best that ever he could have kept you, for it was just the instrument that was needed for to heal him and to indirectly introduce him to the God of Israel. You know, when you're thinking of all that, maybe your mind again will go to the fact that Paul, a prisoner, many a time I've thought of it, particularly on the ship, would say, in Acts chapter 27. And you remember his telling. Now, he's just maybe a little man, and we're not too sure to tell us that he's little. I don't know if that was true or not. He's not a great man anywhere in the eyes of the world. And he's just a prisoner. Now, you know that. And they're about to kill the prisoners, as it were, because they don't want them to escape. And all that sort of thing. And yet, now listen carefully. Of all that were on that boat that day, the most important man was the prisoner that they despised. Because it was through him that the lives of all that were aboard were delivered and escaped. Now you know that. Now that is God teaching those men and that crew of the greatness of the God that Paul knew. What I'm trying to get round to is that oftentimes what we would look upon as very adverse circumstances could turn out to be most useful in the divine program. Many a child of God, you know, has been brought to hospital, and they have been instrumental just while there in seeing someone saved that otherwise would never have heard the message. Many a child of God has been brought into very trying conditions, and they just met with somebody in those trying conditions that they could be a blessing to in the light of eternity. Wasn't it great for this little maid to be able to say, now there's my master. He's not only healed of his leprosy, now that's the big thing, but a far bigger thing has happened. He's delivered from idolatry, and he's a man who has a knowledge of the God of Israel, and he says there's none like him. None like him. Ah yes, one there is above all others. Oh, how he loves. And we could sing that tonight. There's none like him, for he is wonderful in his doings. That means to say, now we listen very thoughtfully, eh? The nation of Israel has drifted away from God. There's likely very few sacrifices offered to God in that northern part that were going up and ascending to him. And you know that Elijah, earlier than this, he had to offer the sacrifice, and we read about the evening sacrifice, so there must have been some who were offering, whether where they were offering or how they were offering, we do not know. But was it a wonder that while God was being robbed of his portion to a great extent in the land of Israel, that in the land of Syria, there was a sweet savor raising up to God? Isn't that wonderful? From that very man who has just gotten to know God for himself for the first time. Now, is he not a trophy of grace? Is he not a monument that could rejoice our hearts to think about tonight? And oh, we're just Gentiles too, as you know, and we too have been saved. And we too can give God his portion in a land where all is contrary to his will and purpose. Now, Elijah has a servant. We've been reading about him earlier, called Gehazi. And you know, he does demonstrate in a very vivid way the covetousness of the human heart. He sees Naaman going away with those bags of gold and silver and those lovely clothes, that those nice garments, those nice robes. And he says, "You know, my master's been too soft with that boy. He should never let him away without making him give up some of that treasure and making us all rich." And Gehazi, he just gets on the go, and he runs after him, and he overtakes him. And he says, "Look," now he told nothing but lies. He says, my master, had two visitors called to see him, and they would need robes, and their sons are the prophets, and they could be doing with a bit of wealth, and they're poor and needy, and he put up his lying story. And of course, he says, "Yeah, I'll take a bag of silver, and I'll take a couple of changes of garments or something like that." "Oh," says Naaman, take a couple of, don't stop like that. Man, he went home. He thought he had done well, didn't he? "I have gotten what my boss missed, you know, but I didn't miss it. And I've got at least a bit of it. I didn't get it all, but I got some of it. And I'm doing fairly well now because I have a couple of nice robes, you know, and a couple of three garments, and I'll be all right. And I'll have this bag of stuff here. I'll never be poor again. Man, dear, could you not see human heart in that? Could you not see what was operating? Now, he's an Israelite, you remember. He's an Israelite. And he should have known better. But when he comes back, his master says, "Look, say, you went away and you thought I knew nothing about it, but the Lord has made it known to me what you were doing. My heart went with you. And you see what he did. Now listen, brother, now I wish we could learn a lesson. He gave a Gentile man a false impression. For he made him think what the lady most to keep out of his mind. He made him think that God would take, as it were, payment for what he had done for him. And he was acting absolutely different to the master that he served, for his master wouldn't take it. Elisha wouldn't take it. Now these are very witty things, very witty, brother. Because we could do things. Now listen to me now. We're not saying that you do tell the lazy things. We're not suggesting that. But we could do things that are totally contrary to our master, our blessed Lord. Remember, he left the world with very little. The clothes on his back was about all he had when he was nailed on a cross, and he saw them being bartered, and he saw them being handed over to the soldiers, torn up and handed like that. He took nothing of this world's wealth. The greatest benefactor the world has ever known. Now listen very carefully. The greatest benefactor that the world has ever known took no payment from the world for what he had done for it. Went and sold all that he had and bought it. Now he wouldn't want us. He wouldn't want us to make his service or anything connected with his as a means of our earthly gain or anything like that. He would want us to realize that we are not here to get what we can out of the world. That as we sing it at times, the world has nothing left for thee. We sing this to sinners, of course, but it's nothing left for us either. Now I know we need our clothes, don't misunderstand me. And we need our food, and we need our homes. Now we're not unreasonable, we're not preaching like you just go and give everything away and then you have nothing and you can't pay your bill. That'll be silliness, you know that. But dear please, dear brother, I'm not thinking many of you need this, but if there's anyone needs it, don't be thinking that worldly things are of great importance. You'll get what'll do. You don't need to get beyond what you need. And God's kind to us. Most of us could say far, far more than ever we expected. And very, very few of us now, maybe there are exceptions, but very few of us have had to go to bed hungry because we had no food in the house. And very few of us have risen in the morning with no breakfast to take. Now some of God's dear servants did do that and had nothing to eat. And maybe nothing to eat for days. But that's not so often now. God's people are usually finding the necessities of life. Now we don't need to get excited or alarmed. We'll sing it for years. I hope we believe it. Take the world, but give me Jesus. All its joys are but a name, but his love abideth ever. Through eternal years the same. Here's a man would wear clothes his master wouldn't wear. Here's a man would take money his master wouldn't take. Here's a man thought of earthly things in a way his master didn't do. For Elisha knew nothing of that covetous heart that was filling Gehazi. But then there's a sad point of it. Not as this. He's told by the prophet, Elisha, look, the leprosy. The leprosy that was on Naaman is coming on you. Now that to me is very sad and very solemn. And he says you'll be a leper to the day of your death and all connected with you will be smitten with leprosy. That's an awful sentence put on him. One of the sons of the prophets, one who was professedly associated with the God of Israel, one who was keeping company to some extent with Elisha, and yet he's falling into very serious error, and he has been a subject of divine judgment. This would make you afraid, wouldn't it? Make you cautious that there's nothing in our life. Oh, dear brother, I hope we're not covetous. I hope there's nothing in us that we're envious of the world. You know, used to hear of a dear lady, and if she went to somebody's house and it was better furnished than hers, she'd sit down at home and cry that she had just a plain home and the other people had nice homes. Now, don't be silly, dear brother. We don't need to be unwise. We are thankful for what we have. Now, don't misunderstand us. We're thankful for that. And we don't think that Christians should be living in anything like hermits or anything like that. But at the same time, don't let us get overoccupied with worldly treasure. Can we really say with all our heart, the world has nothing left that I want? That's how Elisha felt. It had nothing for him. He was quite content with what he had. And he didn't want to enrich himself by that man that he had seen saved. May the Lord comfort us and bless us now. Bless this meditation. I hope you notice that we've touched on things from this story you don't normally hear. You hear the other bit. And it's rightly true in the gospel. I think I could preach from it myself. You can be sure I've done it a few times. And we all do it. Because it is a great story in regard to sinners, but it has lessons in it for saints, and I hope we'll not forget them, and that the Lord will bless them too. Shall we pray?